like to thank TechServe today for sponsoring my show. Hello, and welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I am Chef Erica Wides from the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan, and I'm broadcasting today from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So on today's show, I want to talk about vegetables. Vegetables and vegetables alone. Vegetables are probably my favorite of all the food categories. I think people tend to limit themselves when it comes to how many vegetables they really enjoy eating and know what to do with. So I want to really get into talking about what's out there and what varieties are there and what the seasons are all about and what's available now and how to cook them, because I get asked that all the time as a cooking teacher. And I also have a guest on today who is chef slash farmer Dave Ramirez. Dave was a colleague of mine at ICE years ago, and he was a chef in New York for many years, and he made the big move down to North Carolina a couple of years ago, moved his family down there, and has now made the leap from being chef to farmer. So, hi, Dave.
Hey, Erica. How's it going?
How are you?
I'm great.
Are you in the field?
I just finished picking, and I'm back at my house / packing shed and washing station, and so I'll be washing and drying a whole bunch of salad greens for the next hour or two, and then I'll be dropping them off at a restaurant. So it was picked this morning, and they'll be serving it for dinner tonight.
So what I want to do is kind of give people an idea of how this all came into being for you.
Sure.
You like myself, you were a restaurant chef in New York for many years. We met when you were still working at Chanterelle.
Mm-hmm.
And then we taught together at ICE, and then you guys decided to move down there to the Triangle area.
Right.
And so when you moved down to Triangle, you started working at the Lantern.
Yeah.
Right, in Chapel Hill. And and so then how did you wind up going from working in the Lantern to being Farmer Dave?
To being Farmer Dave. Well, I had always worked with farmers, both at Chanterelle and at Lantern, and even more so at Lantern. A lot of the restaurants here deal with locally grown produce and deal with farmers, so I got to really know a lot of them over the year or so that I worked at Lantern. And then in the fall of 2008, I decided that I was ready for something else other than working in a restaurant, and wasn't quite sure what I was going to do, and toying with the idea of going back into teaching. And in December, I saw an ad in the local paper for a program. It's, I guess it's technically called a farm incubator program. There's a farm that was donated by a local resident to NC State, and they started a program now called Plant, and this is the second year it's been running, and it's a combination 8-week workshop program that you attend, and then at the end of that you write a business plan and you can lease a spot on the farm. And that's exactly what I did. So it's a really, really great way for people who think they might want to try farming to get into it, because I don't own any land. I don't have any land in my family. I don't have a lot of money to lay out to prep a piece of land. So this is a really great program. We learned all about what's involved in, marketing and growing. Excuse me. And, we have, there's 12 of us at the farm, so we all get to help each other out and ask questions and compare notes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people from the college and the county extension program that are helping us out. So it's a really, really great way to see if this is what I in fact want to do. So far, I'm loving it.
So far,
there's a lot to learn every day. I realize that.
And a lot of work.
A lot of work. I'm happy to be still involved with food. I when I left the restaurant, I really wanted to figure out a way to stay involved with food. And this, I think, is more than anything else that I've considered is something that's made me happy. So it's a lot of work, like you said, that's kind of a different rhythm, and I kind of like being at the source. And, you know, I'm able to connect directly to restaurants that buy my produce, and then I sell at a farmer's market. So, you know, I get to directly sell to people, and that's really good.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exciting. So how much actual space did they give you? Like, how many acres or feet?
Well, we're sub-acre farming. My plot is about a third of an acre.
Mm-hmm.
And I've discovered that you can get yourself into a lot of trouble with that much land.
Right. Seems small.
You know,
but
it seems really small until you start working on it. And,
yeah.
You know, a lot of the farms in this area, you know, the farmers may own, you know, 10, 20, 30 acres, but a lot of them are, you know, in terms of, like, the amount of land that's actually in production, a lot of times it's just, like, an acre or two.
Mm-hmm.
Do a lot of crop rotation and stuff like that.
Right.
So I have my spot at the farm, which is where I just got back from. And then I'm also doing some stuff on my small lot,
your backyard.
Suburban, subdivision. So I'm doing some backyard farming.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually people that are farming on several, you know, a network of several backyards.
Oh, wow.
There's a guy in Canada that has a thing he's calling spin farming. I think it stands for, like, small plot intensive farming.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing kind of, you know, crops that don't take up a lot of space, a lot of salad greens and radishes and things like that. And, you know, they'll lease or make arrangements to farm in, say, you know, 8 or 10 backyards.
Huh.
And
that's
they're
great.
Able to produce enough stuff from that to make a living out.
Right.
So that's definitely something I'm considering.
Yeah.
I probably have another year or two at the farm, so that's good. I'm going to have that land. But, you know, I'm not really in the position to buy, you know, a big piece of land anytime soon.
Sure.
So I'm trying to figure out all the options.
Sure. Okay, we have
my urban.
Sorry, we have to take a short break, Dave, but you'll stick around. You're going to stay with us?
I sure will.
Okay,
I'm
good.
Right here.
Okay, so we'll be back in a few seconds on Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. TechServe today for sponsoring my show. Welcome back to Why We Cook. I'm Chef Erica Wides, and we are broadcasting today from Roberta's Pizzeria in Brooklyn. And with us today online is Chef Farmer Dave Ramirez. You still there, Dave?
Still here.
Okay, so I want to get back to what you were just talking about with the backyard gardening. I love that idea of sort of patching together big pieces of land from people's backyards. That's a great idea.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I do some private work up in Connecticut, you know, and these clients of mine have these massive properties, and, you know, they're all just planted in grass.
Right.
And,
I know,
I always think, like, God, what an incredible waste of land and water and, you know, fertilizer and resources. If everybody planted that land with edible stuff.
Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it really is amazing what you can do in a relatively small amount of space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are books and people that...
Like square foot
gardening.
...talk
all about.
Yeah.
Square foot gardening is a great way to go for the home gardener. There's a guy named John Jevons who does this, bio-intensive planting. And, you know, there are really a lot of possibilities, and whether it's in backyards or, you know, vacant lots and urban settings. There are a lot of possibilities for farming. I mean, I think we're just scratching the surface.
Yeah. I mean, even I live in an apartment in Brooklyn, but we have this tiny little cottage upstate and I have a patio, and we found an old bathtub in the woods years ago, this old clawfoot bathtub, and dragged it back to the house, and I grow lettuce and radishes and stuff in there, and now it's great. I do all my gardening in pots because we have a lot of animals up there who eat everything, so it's,
So do we. We employ electric fences.
yeah, you have to. I mean,
you have to protect
your investment. So what kind of stuff are you growing?
Well, I'm growing a lot of salad greens, uh-huh. and that's something that, you know, I just like really, really good salad mixes as a diner. And, you know, when I was working in the restaurant and buying, it was something that I felt like, you know, was really available a lot in the spring and a little bit in the fall. And the rest of the year, nobody was really doing it. And it's kind of, you know, it's challenging to grow that kind of stuff here in the summer. So we're talking about extending the season. I know you want to talk about seasonality, and that's an important thing. But so as a chef, I would get frustrated that, you know, we were having to get salad mix from California.
Right.
In the middle of the summer and the middle of the winter. In fact, it might even be easier to cook salad mix in the winter here than in the summer.
Right, because you don't really, it doesn't get so cold that, yeah, you could do it.
You could use cold frames. With a modest amount of protection and low covers and stuff, it can be done.
Right.
So I'm doing a lot of that. And then, you know, I have lots of heirloom tomatoes and chili peppers, which are things that, as a gardener, I really, really love growing. I have snow peas and snap peas, which are just kind of phasing out now. And then green beans are just about getting close to coming in. Another week or two, we should have some greens.
Yeah, you're like a month ahead of us.
About a month ahead, I think. Yeah.
My snap peas don't even have flowers on them yet.
Yeah, and mine are just about fizzling out. It's funny. I unfortunately just lost like a whole crop of zucchini. And my cucumbers are not looking so good.
Oh, no.
So we're growing organically or naturally. I guess we're not allowed to
call it organic.
Organic.
Right.
We're not certified, but that's a whole nother show.
Yeah.
So we're having to deal with insects, you know, through natural means, which can be challenging. And a lot of times it means, you know, losing crops.
Yeah.
So you know, learning already a lesson about, you know, you think you're going to have something at market, and then you don't, and, you know, plan B. So,
right.
I think of other things to grow. Yeah, a lot of radishes.
Mm-hmm.
Radishes, like, are great, and they make you feel like a master farmer.
I know. I planted radishes and harvested them in 21 days.
Yeah, yeah. The radishes are pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So I have some radishes, some carrots, you know, pretty standard stuff for my first year. I'm trying to play it kind of safe. But I really do want to try to keep this salad mix going as long as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of farmers, you know, that are more established, that don't like all the work involved in washing and drying and spinning and all that stuff. So, you know, I'm perfectly willing to take that on.
Well,
my little niche.
And you can charge more if you sell it pre-washed.
Exactly.
Yeah
you can. You can. So it's a pretty good markup. And, you know, I think for me, it's worth the extra work. Because it's also something that I really like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, you're familiar with the Chef's Garden, of course. You and I know about Chef's Garden in Ohio.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah, and they've managed to extend their growing season almost, you know, the whole year through greenhouses and cold frames and all that. We're going to take a very short break. And can you stay on, or are you...
I sure can.
You
got
to go sell. Okay, so we'll just keep you on. So just hold on, and we'll be back in a few seconds on Why We Cook. Thank you to TechServe today for sponsoring Why We Cook. And we are back and talking with Chef Farmer Dave Ramirez. I guess that's your new title now. I always called you Chef Dave.
Chef Farmer.
But now you're
it's
Chef
funny.
Farmer Dave.
I actually made some business cards with Chef and Farmer and a little hand pointing from chef to farmer. So that's
right.
Kind of fun.
Your evolution. Right, I love that.
My evolution.
There are all these restaurants that are earth to table, and you're now table to earth. Like, you've gone
right, exactly.
Back
and,
the other
you know,
way.
Actually, though, there's a couple, there's at least one other farm at the market who were one of the guys that took exactly the same career path as I did. He was a chef and,
mm-hmm.
and farming. And
went
you know,
back. Yeah.
Yeah, I you know, I think it might be a better personality fit for me. We'll see.
Yeah, well, I could see that. I mean, I've known you a long time. Yeah, I could see you in the overalls and the straw hat and riding the tractor.
That's right.
At the farmer tan.
Tobacco juice.
Yeah, exactly. So so you're selling to restaurants and you're selling at a farmer's market?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
I got into a farmer's market here in town.
Mm-hmm.
This is Hillsborough, North Carolina.
Right.
It's about 20 minutes from Chapel Hill. And it's an up and coming market, you know. It's I think this is the second year it's been in existence, and the town built a really nice market house for it. And you know, we've been doing it about 6 weeks now, and every week more and more people are coming. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a really good market.
And even with the tanking economy, people are still willing to pay a little bit more for quality.
Yeah, I mean, apparently so. I mean, I think there's just a general awareness of eating locally and people, you know, people are like, hey, you know, I thought I heard somewhere that I'm supposed to be eating locally, you know?
Right.
Come on down.
Right. They get the idea. It's sort of in the media, and it's like the zeitgeist.
It's great.
But,
you know, with you know, the Obamas doing the garden at the White House.
Right.
I mean, there's more visibility than ever. So, I mean, I don't really know how it's been comparing to other years since this is my first year,
mm-hmm.
but you know, there are definitely people coming down.
That's great.
Selling to a couple of restaurants, and I'm trying to get started with a CSA, which
mm-hmm.
is a community-supported
agriculture. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm in an area with lots of farmland and lots of country and stuff, but my house is in, you know, a fairly suburban kind of subdivision with
right.
a lot of houses. So I'm trying to leverage, you know, that location and maybe deliver in the neighborhood
mm-hmm.
and kind of.
You could be like the Avon lady of vegetables.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like.
Or like the milkman.
And you know, the people that I've talked to about that are very enthusiastic. So I think that might be a really good outlet for me.
Maybe you could like retrofit an old milk delivery truck to run on biodiesel that you make from your compost.
Yeah, I could go over to. You know, Burger King and Bojangles and
right.
all they use fryer oil.
Right, or use your compost.
Or use my compost, yeah. I definitely have been doing a lot of compost.
Compost, yeah. My composting up at my little cottage consists of taking all my vegetable scraps and throwing them in the woods.
Right, okay, well, hey.
You know, keeps it out of the waste stream.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah, because I don't produce enough to really compost
right.
up there.
You
but, you know, but I try. Well, I don't want to keep you for too much longer because I know you have to get to your
that's okay.
your market and everything. I mean,
my greens are dunked in the water and they're very happy to be cooling off.
Oh, so. Okay, they're chilling.
I have a giant cooler and they're being hydro cooled.
Nice,
blast chilled.
Mm-hmm. So, do you want to stay on with us for the rest of the show, or you want to get going?
I can hang for a little while longer.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about, like, seasonality or something?
Yeah, that's where I'm going next. I mean, I want to talk about what's in season mostly, you know, because I'm broadcasting from New York, but, you know, you guys are a little bit ahead of us. And
how about one more segment?
What's that?
How about one more segment?
One more segment. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay, so we'll take another quick little break, and when we come back, let's talk about seasonality and also how to cook all this stuff and how to prepare it and
cool.
how to wash
it. I'll try to help out with that.
Who knows better than you? All right, we'll be right back.
Okay.
again to TechServe for sponsoring the show today. Welcome back to Why We Cook. I'm Chef Erica Wides, and I'm broadcasting today from Roberta's Pizzeria, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Keep in mind that all of our shows are archived online at heritageradionetwork.com, so if you want to listen at any other time, you can. It'll be there for eternity, so you can come back and listen again. And joining me today is Chef Farmer Dave Ramirez, an old friend of mine who has made the leap from being a restaurant chef to being a farmer in Hillsborough, North Carolina. And I love that the whole idea of the incubator, you know, project that you have this whole support system helping you out.
That's it's great. Really cool. And there are more and more of them across the country. So
yeah,
it's, I think the average age of farmers is like mid to late 50s or something.
Right.
So, you know, there's a real need for, not that I'm like super young or anything, but there's a need to find that next generation of farmers.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's the days of you grow up on a farm and you become a farmer. Those are kind of dwindling.
Right.
Farmland is dwindling.
And small family farms are closing.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's a great way to reach out to people that have always kind of dreamed of farming or thought they might be interested in it, but just would have no idea on how to get started.
Yeah.
So it's a great way to get.
It is. It's almost, it's like doing an internship and then getting hired right out of the internship. Yeah. Exactly. I think in Washington State at the University of Washington, they have a program now in organic farming. I think it's like the only one in the country or something. And they also just had that whole thing with Michael Pollan's book a week ago, where they were handing out in defense of real food was going to be, it's given out to all the freshmen, but then they had pressure from all the big agribusiness companies who supply their research money, and so they pulled the book. But then there was all this public outrage, and so they reinstated the book,
which
I think is great. So anyway, back to talking about vegetables. You know, what I wanted to kind of cover on the show too is, you know, what do you do in the spring? People often say to me, you know, and probably to you, like, I really want to eat seasonally. I want to eat locally, but I don't know what to do with this stuff. They get a CSA box delivered and it's like 40 pounds of turnips, you know, and a piece of rhubarb. And they're like, what the hell do I do with this? So I think, you know, first of all, like the preparation and cleaning, you're over there washing greens right now. And, you know, in restaurants, when we wash greens, it's like we fill up the biggest sink we can find in the house with cold water and throw the greens in there and give them a really good bath, let all the dirt go to the bottom. I mean, probably with your stuff, you have to wash it like 2-3 times, right?
So I do it probably 2 with this batch. But yeah, I have it in the cooler, and then I'll take it inside and do it in batches.
Yeah.
In my sink. And and then spin dry, And I'm doing what a lot of farmers do. I have an old, I have an old washing machine.
I was going to say.
And you put it into mesh bags and put it on the spin cycle, and it really works.
Yeah, it's a spinner. Yeah. Well, you know, Julia Child in the old days, she would put greens in a pillowcase and swing it over her head.
Spin it around.
Spin it around. So, and it's, you know, for people who are listening who might not really know how to wash or dry their greens, it's really important, of course, washing, because you want to get all the grit out, because there's nothing like biting into a mouthful of sand. But also, your greens have to be really dry, because otherwise any dressing will just, you know, slip off. It'll puddle in the bottom of your bowl, and that's no good. You don't want to dilute the flavor with any water that's on there. And especially if you're buying organic, there's a good chance you're going to have some little bugs and little critters in there, because you haven't killed them all with poison.
Occasional critter.
When I worked somewhere, and we, you know, years ago, we had organic greens. It was a restaurant in New York that's closed now, but it was one of the first kind of earth to table places, and we used to get our greens from a farmer, and once in a while a little spider would crawl out, you know, while it was on someone's plate, and the customer would freak, and we would say, but you know, bear in mind that it's because there's
no gotta eat too.
And it hasn't been sprayed with poison, so the spider the spider lives too. So once that stuff's washed and dried, how what do you think is the best way to store salad greens that have been
you could store it in a plastic bag or a container. Like a Ziploc with a little bit of air, so like close it most of the way. You could put a paper towel in there to sort of absorb any extra moisture. And, you know, if they're washed and dried properly, they should last a week or more in your refrigerator.
Yeah, I mean, I think getting the almost all the air out is really important, too.
Yeah.
You almost want to
bear in mind that, you know, when you buy the stuff from California in the clamshell, it's probably a week old.
Oh, at least, yeah.
There, you know.
Right.
And so they, if they're, you know, and they have the washing and drying really down to a science in those places. But, you know, if they're prepped properly and carefully, they will last for quite a while.
Yeah, and with herbs, too, I find that if I don't wash them when I first get them and I just keep them, they keep longer, like leafy herbs.
Mm-hmm.
The drier you keep them, the better they last. Yeah. And then other things, you know, turnips and little carrots and all that, I usually don't wash that stuff until I'm ready to use it. And Alton Brown actually does this thing where he fills up his vegetable crisper drawer with sand. And then he buries his root vegetables in the sand in his fridge.
Wow.
Yeah, to replicate like a root cellar. But I don't there's that. But
my farm dog is acting up in the background.
And I think, you know, I was thinking about this last night. If I had to tell people three basic techniques that they should know for cooking vegetables, and you can certainly, you know, pipe in on this too. But I think the first would be blanching, learning how to blanch in shock. The second would be how to just do a basic saute, and the third would be roasting.
Yeah, that pretty much covers it.
It covers it all, right?
Roasting is fantastic for root vegetables of all kinds.
Right, cauliflower.
Sauteing for greens.
Right.
Like arugula. Blanching. And I'd also say like braising, because a lot of, you know, I grow a lot of cooking greens, like kale and collard greens.
Right,
and
the hearty
especially
greens.
Especially here in the South, like people really like to slow cook.
Oh, sure. Right. You're in collard.
With lots of bacon or ham or
of course.
Stuff in there. So you got to put some pork in there. So, yeah, I mean, just kind of, you know, developing some kind of sauteing some pork product, maybe some onions and garlic, and putting a little liquid in there, and then, you know, slow cooking greens like that.
Right. Southern style.
Great technique. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I also really love collards if you just slice them up really, really thin, do like a really fine chiffonade. And just a really quick sauté with olive oil and a little lemon juice. Like, they do that in Brazil. And I think it's amazing because if you serve it to people who have only ever eaten collards cooked, you know, in Southern style till they disintegrate, it's like this amazing revelation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
People don't even know
like
you can eat them raw.
You can do that with. And
yeah, and I love kale. I mean, and if you know, if you're really looking to kind of raise the level of nutrition in your diet, too, I mean, you can't do better than leafy greens. Kale,
yeah,
you know.
The darker green, the better.
The darker, the better. And kale is like number one, I think, like super antioxidant.
Especially the Tuscan kale. It's fantastic stuff.
That's I love that.
Kale.
That stuff's great.
I'm growing a little of that this year, and I'll probably grow a lot more next year.
You know, I bought some seeds to grow that, and I keep screwing up with the growing season. Like, I can't get it in the ground at the right time. But, you know, you have to keep in mind our listeners aren't chefs like us. So what I want to do is just you know, take a couple minutes. We'll go over some of these basic techniques so they have a sense. So blanching and shocking, for those of you who don't know what that is, blanching is a technique where you take a vegetable and you drop it in boiling water. And what happens is it sets the color of the vegetable very quickly. So if it's a green vegetable, it becomes very bright green. And it softens it up just enough or all the way, depending on how long you want to cook it. And then you pull it out of that boiling water and you drop it in ice water. And the ice water sets the color and stops the cooking. And that's great for things like green beans or asparagus,
broccoli,
right. Anything you want to keep really bright green. Even, you know, sometimes if I'm doing like a crudité where I'm serving raw vegetables, I'll still blanch the green vegetables. It makes them crisper, it makes them brighter. And it also actually makes them last longer on the platter. Like they look better. You know, they're brighter, they're greener, they're fresher looking. You know, raw broccoli gets that kind of dried up, yucky white surface that I hate. Yeah. So it's a lot nicer. So basically green vegetables we blanch by dropping them into boiling water. And you always want to put some salt in there too. For flavor. And it also kind of helps to brighten them up. But if you're going to be blanching root vegetables, you want to start in cold water. Things like potatoes, turnips, anything that's really dense, you start it in cold water, bring it up to a boil. Right, Chef Dave?
Right.
Because they're dense and you need the heat to slowly kind of penetrate and get through them. And then I don't shock root vegetables, do you?
Not necessarily. There's really no need to.
You don't really have to.
I mean, unless you horribly overcook them to begin with and you're in trouble, you got to shock them. But yeah, I'd rather take them out a little bit before and let them cool off, and they'll continue to cook just a little bit.
Yeah, or if it's something like a potato, if what right. I like to do is when I pull it out of the boiling water and then you spread it out and let it kind of air dry, and it dries up the surface really nicely too. So then if you want to saute them, they'll get really, really crisp.
Right, right.
And you know, they won't absorb, they won't be wet, so they won't get sticky and they won't splash.
Yeah, and I think even for potato salad and stuff like that, if you can let it air dry rather than, you know, running cold water over it, I think you're going to, again, your whatever you flavor it with is going to stick to the potato better.
And yeah. Flavor. It's like the skin becomes porous, mm-hmm. like the pores open up and then it absorbs. And that's important, like if you're going to dress potatoes, make potato salad, they should be warm when you put the dressing on because they'll absorb. Yes.
Right, and I'm not a cool down.
We agree. We concur.
We agree.
And then, you know, if you know how to do a basic saute or a basic stir fry, you're covered for your greens, your more tender greens. You know, you're covered for shredded zucchini, mm-hmm. Shredded carrots, things like that. You know, heat up a big pan, choose an oil or a fat that you like the flavor of, and something that goes well with whatever the vegetable is that you're cooking. Get your pan nice and hot. Get your oil nice and hot, throw your vegetables in, quick toss, 1, 2, 3, a little salt, pepper, some herbs, and you're good to go. I mean, I think the thing, you know, is to really handle your vegetables as little as possible.
Yeah, definitely.
Let them shine.
Yeah, especially if they're good and fresh and locally grown, you know. Just
right.
Enjoy them.
Yeah, I mean, let them stand for themselves. You know, they mm-hmm. should, vegetables should actually taste good.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of people who grew up like we did, like in the 70s, don't realize that.
Half a bottle of blue cheese dressing
on your
beautiful young greens.
Right. Like I remember my mom opening the freezer every night and being like, should we have frozen broccoli? Should we have French cut green beans? Should we have lima beans? You know, it was like this row of packages. And I mean, it's amazing how far we've come in 20 years. And then the last one I think that people should know how to do is roast. You should really mm-hmm. know how to roast vegetables, because for things like root vegetables, for cauliflower, even for things like zucchini, squash, tomatoes, roasting is so great because you really slowly remove the moisture and you let the sugars really caramelize. And to me, that's like, they're just gold, you know, roasted beets. It's like gems mm-hmm. from the earth, you know, just toss your little baby beets. And if I have really tiny baby beets or baby turnips, I don't even peel them.
Right.
You know, No need to peel.
No need.
Are you growing those little tiny Japanese turnips?
Not now. I probably will put a crop in the fall.
Mm-hmm. I love those. Yeah. They're so good. What about daikon? You doing any daikon?
I have some. I actually have a Chinese. Daikon does better in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And I have a Chinese variety of radish called shunkyo.
Oh.
And it's a big, long red radish, and it's really hot, but it does well in the summer, and it does well in the heat, so traditional, you know, usually radishes are more of a cool weather crop, an early spring crop, so I'm trying to, like with a lot of things, push the envelope as far as I can, see how long I can go until they're just, like, unbearably hot.
Right.
Also, as a new farmer, you know, trying to stretch the seasons a little bit and being the first with something or being the last to have something, kind of makes a difference when you're competing with people who have been in the game for a long time and have a loyal customer base. So,
you know, I'm sure.
I'm hoping the novelty of having salad mix in August will win me a few customers. So, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was out at Chef's Garden in Ohio, and for listeners who don't know what that is, the Chef's Garden is a farm in Ohio that grows very, very high end specialty heirloom vegetables and microgreens that they basically only sell to the trade. They only sell to chefs, although now they're actually starting an e-commerce site for the public, and I just shot some video for them. I did some demos for their e-commerce site, but I was out there in April, and they do a lot of work with greenhouses and cold frames, and they basically have a year-round growing season, partly because of where they're located. They're in a little microclimate in northern Ohio, but they've really learned how to extend the season, and they are already picking tomatoes. They had little cherry tomatoes.
That's amazing.
Pretty early on, you know, that they had covered, you know, in a greenhouse for the year. But they've figured it out, you know, but they've been doing it a lot longer on a much bigger scale.
Yeah, exactly. They have a little bit of a head start. But I think, you know, there's if you ever see a guy named Elliot Coleman, he has some really great books.
Oh, yeah, in Maine.
He's way up in Maine. And he and his wife, Barbara Damrosch, who's another great gardening writer. You know, they grow vegetables all year round, and, you know, he's not trying to trick everybody by growing tomatoes in January. You know, mm-hmm. he's trying to take crops that naturally do well in the cool weather and just kind of giving them a little bit of help.
Right.
I think, you know, the fact that Chef's Garden is having tomatoes now, again, you know, they're extending the season. They're not trying to completely screw around with the season.
Right.
Because, you know, it's really not, you know, we're all used to getting every vegetable all year round.
Yeah.
And we all know how great, you know, those January tomatoes taste.
Right. I mean, we all need to kind of
Why bother?
Break that habit. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think there's a difference between kind of extending the season a little bit and just trying to outsmart nature, because it can be done, but it's not, the results are never very good.
Yeah. No, it's really important, I think, to stay within that cycle, too. So we have to start wrapping it up here, but what I want to do is let's just do like a really quick rundown of the summer. What's in season now, what we're heading into. I mean, I know up here still it's a little bit cooler. So
right.
We're still asparagus, rhubarb, ramps,
yep.
Pea shoots, pea greens, small.
Things like that.
We're not.
Greens, radishes.
Right.
You know.
We don't have strawberries yet. Do you guys?
Oh, we're actually just finishing strawberries.
Wow. See, we don't even have them yet.
Right. So strawberries is kind of a spring into summer.
And strawberries, I think, are really one of those things that you should eat them when they're in season, and then that's it. Don't touch them again.
Forget about it.
Forget
it. Enjoy them next year.
Right, yeah.
Freeze a few, make a couple of smoothies, you know.
Right,
whatever.
Make some jam.
Right.
Right, and then, so you guys in June, you're heading into what?
We are now just starting with, like, summer squash.
Mm-hmm.
Zucchini and those things are just coming in. Tomatoes are right around the corner. There's a few farmers that actually have some, but you know, they started them a little bit earlier undercover. What else? Green beans are going to be coming in soon.
Melons, eggplant.
Melons a little bit later.
Later, like August.
Corn will be coming.
Right.
Corn comes here more like June, July.
Mm-hmm.
Tomatoes.
Right. And with all of that, if you're like
really
in the
excited.
Tri-state area like I am, or further north, add a month onto that because it'll all be like a month
right,
down the road.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right, and then August we get into like the zucchini and the squash and the melons mm-hmm. and all the great tomatoes.
Eggplant. Chili peppers.
Right. And then...
Even for here, chili peppers is like August.
Mm-hmm. They need so much sun and such hot...
Yeah.
Yeah, they come
mm-hmm.
from the tropics. Yeah, and then just quick getting into the fall, we'll get into the hearty greens, kale and...
Right.
All of that stuff. And Brussels.
Collards. Brussels sprouts, yeah, late fall. And those things actually get better as they get colder. And with a frost.
Right, they get nipped.
A lot of the winter, you know, the hard squashes and things like that. Sweet potatoes will come in late fall.
Mm-hmm. Pumpkins, all that stuff.
Pumpkins, yep.
Right, yeah. I mean, people, I think, you know, they're confused. They want to know what's in season. But I think instinctively mm-hmm. sometimes you know. You know, you sort of go, oh,
right.
yeah, like I remember. When I was a kid, we ate really good tomatoes in the summer.
Although, right.
when I think about that,
might be like a last generation of that.
I think so. Yeah, because I have students now who are 18, 19, and don't know.
Yeah, and you're putting a dinner party menu together in February, and you're, you know, having corn. And
right, asparagus.
Tomatoes and asparagus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that makes me crazy, because asparagus has such a short little season no matter where you are.
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks.
And it's really, really special if you can get it. Mm-hmm. In season, it's incredible, the difference.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. I mean, and if you've ever eaten it, you know, good asparagus versus like sort of South American commodity asparagus.
Yep.
I know.
It's pretty profound, the difference.
Yeah. All right, well, we have to start wrapping it up here, Dave.
Okay.
But I really want to thank you for coming on. It was great. And the name
of
your farm is Geodesic Gardens.
Geodesic Gardens.
Geodesic Gardens.
A little homage to
Buckminster Fuller.
I'm a big fan of.
And you're available at the Hillsborough Farmers Market?
It's actually called the Eno River Farmers Market.
Oh, okay.
In downtown Hillsborough.
What day of the week?
It's Saturday mornings from 8 to noon, and then they're talking about a Tuesday or Wednesday market, so I'll definitely be there too.
So if people want to meet you in person and come buy your stuff?
Yep.
Look for Farmer Dave. He has red hair and probably a lot of freckles now from all the sun.
A lot of freckles and a little touch of gray.
And he's very fit because he's a marathon runner.
Yes, extremely fit.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to check in with you again later in the summer and see how the farm's coming along and see what you're growing.
That'd be great.
We'll do an update with the seasons.
I'd love to do that.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Dave, and we'll have you on again, and we'll talk to you soon. Good luck with the farm.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right.
Okay, great.
Bye.
Great to be with you. Bye.
All right. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for us today on Why We Cook. So that was Chef Dave Ramirez, who's an old friend of mine. And Dave is somebody who's as passionate about food as anyone I know. And I love that he's sort of made this transition back to being a sourcer as opposed to sort of a processor, which is really what chefs are. That's about all the time we have for today. So thank you so much again for joining us on Why We Cook. And you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. I want to thank TechServe once more for sponsoring the show. And we'll see you next time. Thanks.